Be dressed, ready for service, and keep your lamps burning, like men waiting for their master to return from a wedding banquet, so that when he comes and knocks, they can immediately open the door for him. It will be good for those servants whose master finds them watching when he comes. I tell you the truth. He will dress himself to serve. Will have them recline at the table and will come and wait on them. It will be good for those servants whose master finds them ready, even if he comes in the second or third watch of the night. But understand this. If the owner of the house had known at what hour the thief was coming, he would not let his house be broken into. You also must be ready, when the Son of Man will come at an hour when you do not expect him. Peter asks, Lord, are you telling this parable to us or to everyone? The Lord answered, Who then is the faithful and wise manager, whom the master puts in charge of his servants to give them their food allowance at the proper time? It will be good for that servant whom the master finds doing so when he returns. I tell you the truth, he will put him in charge of all his possessions. But suppose the servant says to himself, My master is taking a long time in coming. And he then begins to beat menservants and maidservants and to eat and drink and get drunk. The master of that servant will come on a day when he does not expect him, and at an hour he is not aware of. He will cut him to pieces and assign him a place with the unbelievers. That servant who knows his master's will and does not get ready and does not do what the master wants will be beaten with many blows. For the one who does not know and does things deserving punishment will be beaten with few blows. From everyone who has been given much, much will be demanded. And from the one who has been entrusted much, much will be asked.
When I was at school, we were given a book by William Golding called The Lord of the Flies to read. And it's a book about a group of very well-educated English public school boys who are sent away for safety at the beginning of World War II. And they're on an aeroplane with one of the masters from the school, but a terrible storm, a thunderstorm, results in the plane crashing. And they end up, the boys, on their own on a remote desert island. The plane crew have all died, and the boys are left there without a master, pupils without a master. And of course the question is, how are they going to behave? How are they going to live on this island? And at first they are organized and they work very well together. But over time, things deteriorate. They divide into gangs. They fight each other. They cover themselves with war paint like savages. They even kill. The longer the absence of any authority, the more things go wrong, until a major event brings the story to a close. And the 1963 black and white film version does the ending very well. One of the boys is being pursued by others. They are out for his blood. He's running to get away, and he can hear them behind chanting his name, and he's turning this way and that and finding no escape. Eventually he's scrambling on his hands and knees on the sand, and the camera is just kind of focusing on his hands clawing at the sand, and then suddenly the hands come up against a pair of bright white deck shoes, and the camera slowly rises. And there, standing on the beach, is a naval officer, head to toe in white uniform. And he surveys the scene. He looks at this boy. He looks at the other boys coming out from the jungle with their war paint on and so on. And then at the end, the camera focuses on the face of one of the boys, paint on his cheeks, as he slowly drops his head in shame. Pupils without a master, for a time it was fine, but the longer the absence, the more risk of things going badly wrong. Now, we've given this morning's message a title, When He Returns, because our reading this morning is Jesus talking to his disciples about a time when he would no longer be with them, he would be absent, and how should they behave until he returns, until the time when he returns. Now, firstly, for the followers of Jesus, there was going to be what we might call a mini absence of Jesus. When he was arrested and crucified and buried, he was at that time absent from them, a crucial 3-day period. Well, he wanted them to know that he had not abandoned them. He wanted them to know that he would return, and he did. And he found a fairly mixed situation amongst his disciples after just 3 days. But then, of course, there was to be a major absence when Jesus this time would be taken not to the cross but to heaven. And his absence wouldn't be just for 3 days but many, many years, probably far longer than they ever expected. But again, they had to know he would return. If he could come back from his descent into hell, he could certainly come back from his ascension into heaven. But the question would be this: what situation would he find then? If he found a mixed situation after 3 days, what would it be like after 3 years? Or 300 years? Or 3,000 years? The longer the absence, the more risk of things going badly wrong. Well, that's the situation that we're living in today, isn't it? 2,000 years have passed since the ascension of Jesus. He's not yet returned. These verses are here to help us keep going, to give us guidance until the time when he returns. It's interesting, isn't it, how the absence of Jesus has often been used as a reason to ignore him altogether. Skeptics might say, oh, well, where is this Jesus? Where is this promise of his return? Why hasn't he come back yet? It's interesting how these verses show us that Jesus anticipates those kind of questions. He helps people to be prepared for a very, very lengthy absence. These verses feed our faith in Jesus. So it's a passage very fitted for our times, because we live at a time when many years have passed since Jesus went away, and he's yet to come back. The longer the absence, the more risk of things going badly wrong. So it's a word for our time, but I think it's also a word for our church. And I say that because many of us, we hope, are set to live long and generally healthy lives ourselves. And again, you see, that carries a risk. It's relatively easy to remain excited about Jesus in the short term. It's relatively easy to be involved in some kind of church service for a short period of time. But as time goes by, it's easy for us to become lazy, to drift. Our foot comes off the spiritual pedal. The master seems very distant, and serving others in the local church is not quite as pressing as it once was. And I just want to address us this morning, and maybe you think about yourself here. You were actively involved in the church once, but not so much now. You served in many different ways in the past, but not so much now. I wonder whether there's a word for us. The longer the absence, the more risk of things going badly wrong. So it's a word for our day and age, but I think it is also a word for our church. As we live long lives and are tempted over time to pull back from serving the Master. Well, the big antidote to all those wrong attitudes and that slippage is simply the promise from Jesus that he will return. So we've given the title not if he returns, but when he returns. It's interesting, we've been going through Luke's Gospel for a period of time, and over the last few weeks we've been looking at chapters 11 and 12, And this idea of something climactic happening in the future has kind of been there all through these chapters. Just flick back to chapter 11, verses 31 and 32. Jesus there talks about a day of judgment coming. The Queen of the South will rise at the judgment with the men of this generation and condemn them, etc. Verse 32, the men of Nineveh will stand up at the judgment with this generation. Also in chapter 12, verses 2 and 3, he talks about a time when things that are hidden now will be revealed then. Chapter 12, verse 2, there is nothing concealed that will not be disclosed or hidden that will not be made known. And then do you remember 2 weeks ago we were thinking about the rich fool, and there was a climactic event coming up in his life which he had not prepared for. That man who thought he had everything sorted, and God said, "You fool," chapter 12 and verse 20, "this very night your life will be demanded from you." An emphasis always on living with an eye to the something climactic coming in the future. The next big thing, we might say, in history. I'm just thinking about some of the people in the church, and there are some big things coming up in the life of people in this church. There are people who are looking forward to their wedding day. There are people looking forward to becoming grandparents for the first time. There are people who are anticipating maybe a major operation in the future, or a move to a new house, or maybe a new job. But that's not the next big event that we should be preparing for, most of all. No, not even Brexit. The next big event in history that we should be preparing for is the return of Jesus, when he returns. How can we be ready when he returns? Well, I think there's two main things that Jesus is emphasizing in his words to the disciples at that time. We're just going to focus on those two main things this morning. Firstly, let's put the heading up there. The way to be ready to serve the master servant then is to be actively serving him now. Let's just read again verses 35 through to 40 in chapter 12 of Luke. "Be dressed, ready for service, and keep your lamps burning. Like men waiting for their master to return from a wedding banquet, so that when he comes and knocks, they can immediately open the door for him. It will be good for those servants whose master finds them watching when he comes. I tell you the truth, he will dress himself to serve, will have them recline at the table, and will come and wait on them. It will be good for those servants whose master finds them ready, even if he comes in the second or third watch of the night. Understand this, if the owner of the house had known at what hour the thief was coming, he would not have let his house be broken into. You almost must be ready, because the Son of Man will come at an hour when you do not expect him." The imagery here is of a master who's gone away to a wedding, and weddings in those days could sometimes take many days, so the servants were unsure exactly as to when the master would return. He says, however, the faithful servant stays awake, is ready and waiting for his master to return. And that could be at any time. Verse 38 says, it will be good for that servant whose master finds him ready, even if he comes in the second or third watch of the night. And it seems as if everybody else has gone to bed, but the faithful servant has stayed on duty, awake and alert. So what we have described here is a servant who's in a state of readiness, already doing in some way now what he will be required to do in some way then. Imagine, for instance, you have an emergency in your home, and you come in and you smell gas, and there's a leak in one of the pipes somewhere in your property, and you need help straight away. And it just so happens that there are two men in your road who have experience in plumbing and dealing with gas. One of them is your neighbour. He's a very nice man with lots of experience, but he's 75 years old, and he hasn't actually done any serious work with gas for 10 years. He hasn't had his plumbing tools out for some time. He's not up to date with best practice or legislation, and his professional insurance expired when he was 66. Do you go and ask him? The other man is currently running a plumbing business. He's a working plumber out 5 or 6 days a week. His tools are in his van. His insurance is up to date. He's fully in the know on current practice. Do you go and call him? As Peter Parson would say, it's a no-brainer. The way to be ready to serve then is to be actively serving now. You see, Jesus says, there'll be no opportunity to ready ourselves in advance of his coming. We have to be ready all the time. Think about it. This morning, London is prepared for a terrorist attack. It's prepared for a major fire. You get no notice of such things. You have to have people on duty all the time. Our own Andrew Amahari being a case in point. There are men, women ready for anything that happens because we don't know when it's going to happen. They're on duty all the time. Now, the question we have to ask ourselves is, are we still on duty as believers these days? Are we actively serving the gospel, contributing to the life of the church in one way or another, giving our time, our skills, our abilities? You see, look, there is no ageism with Jesus. No ageism. He anticipates a length of service that goes on and on and on right to the very last day. If we're still on duty, if we're up and ready and doing, then the reward is great. Notice what happens in verse 36. Verse 37, it will be good for those servants whose master finds them on watch. Sorry, I think it's verse 36, is it? Like men waiting for their master to return from a wedding banquet so that when he comes and knocks, they can be immediately open the door. It will be good, verse 37, for those servants whose master finds them watching when he comes. I tell you the truth, he will dress himself and serve, will have them recline at the table and will come and wait on them. It's almost as if this master's been away to a wedding banquet and he's brought some of the goodies from the wedding basket back with him. Well, who's going to get to share them? The master who's awake, the servant who's awake, the guy who's on duty is going to get to be served by the master with the goodies he has. The way to be ready to serve the master servant then is to be actively serving him now. And we just have to ask that question of ourselves, don't we? Particularly as time goes by, are we still actively involved, on duty, now, ready for the Master's return? Let's go on to the next half, and let's have a look at this point. The way to please the Master's servant, then, is to treat the Master's servants well now. Let's just read verses 41 and 48. Peter asked, Lord, are you telling this parable to us or to everyone? And the Lord answers, who then is the faithful and wise manager whom the master puts in charge of his servants to give them their food allowance at the proper time? It would be good for that servant whom the master finds doing so when he returns. I tell you the truth, he will put him in charge of all his possessions. But suppose the servant says to himself, my master is taking a long time in coming. And he then begins to beat the men servants and maid servants and to eat and drink and get drunk. The master of that servant will come on a day when he does not expect him and at an hour he is not aware of. He will cut him to pieces and assign him a place with the unbelievers. That servant who knows his master's will and does not get ready or does not do what his master wants will be beaten with many blows. But the one who does not know and does things deserving punishment will be beaten with few blows. From everyone who's been given much, much will be demanded. And from the one who's been entrusted with much, much more will be asked. You and I know that one of the things that has often put people off Christianity has been the abuse of power and excessive self-indulgence in some of its leadership. Now, whether that's in well-established orthodox churches in various parts of the world and the abuse of power, whether it's in more recent examples in various places in the world. One of the things that puts people off Christianity is the abuse of power and excessive self-indulgence, particularly amongst some of its leadership. These verses make it clear that Jesus treats such things very seriously, and he has no place for folk like that in his plans. The master of that servant will come on a day when he does not expect him, at an hour he's not aware of, will cut him to pieces, assign him a place with the unbelievers. I think it's a reminder here that one of the major things that Jesus assesses when he returns is the manner in which we as believers treat each other. Is our attitude in a church one of self-indulgence? I just want the church to serve me. I want the resources to flow in my direction. Or is there a desire to see others attended to? And again, the incentive is great. Verse 42, who then is the faithful and wise manager, whom the master puts in charge of his servants to give them their food allowance at the proper time? It will be good for that servant when the master finds him doing so when he returns. I tell you the truth, he will put him in charge of all his possessions. How we treat each other is of great concern to the Lord Jesus. Now, when people choose to start to attend Grove Hill Evangelical Church, I often suggest that they ask themselves two questions. The first question is this: is this a church that will help them to appreciate more and more God's love for them in Jesus? Is this a church which will help them appreciate more and more God's love for them in Jesus? That's the first question they should ask about this church. The second question is this: is this a church in which they think they can help others to appreciate God's love for them in Jesus? In other words, is it a church, first of all, that can in some way serve them? Secondly, is it a church in which they can serve? Now, those two things should really be going on in all of our lives. This church, is it a church which is serving me, helping me understand the gospel better and its implications? Is this a church which is helping me to help others to appreciate the gospel more and work out its implications? And if over time those two things are not both operating, something's going wrong. Let me put it like this: a failure to serve the master's servants suggests a weakness in our relationship with the master servant, Jesus. Let me say that again. A failure to serve the master's servants, that's each other, suggests a weakness in our relationship with the master servant, Jesus himself. I think, you see, behind both of these points here is the idea that the folk that Jesus is looking for are people who have a living, active relationship with him, ongoing and real. Jesus still matters to them. Jesus is on their mind. They're still respecting his wishes and his ways, even though he's not present with them as he one day will be. It's something which is living and active, and it's showing itself in service, and it's showing itself in care for one another. And I think some of us realize how important that is. I just think about some of us here this morning, particularly those who are of a more senior generation. Some of you have read the Bible for many years. You've heard it preached hundreds of times. You know the importance of serving in the local church. You've had dozens of examples of people who have loved and served the local church right to the end of their days. And you know, as I know, that slippage is most serious. Jesus says this: look, the servant who knows his master's will and does not get ready and does not do what the master wants will be beaten with many blows. Now, I have no idea what that means, beating with many blows, but it doesn't sound good. What Jesus is saying is to those of us here who have had years of instruction, really good example of people serving the church right to the end, ready for Jesus, right to the last day, we have a particular responsibility to respect God's word and to respect their example, to keep serving right to the very end. And I just want us to end with that thought. Look, Jesus gives you and I an opportunity to be engaged in something meaningful right to the very end of our lives. Compare that with many other things that you can do or could do in your life. Imagine this. Some of us used to be able to play football reasonably well. But there comes a time when we're past it and we can't play football reasonably well. Some people here used to be able to understand a business accounts and sum up their financial situation with just looking at some spreadsheets, but those kind of things are beyond us now. How many jobs have been made redundant through technology? How many more will be made redundant through artificial intelligence? But Jesus, the master servant, shows us that he expects us to do work for him, and he gives us the opportunity to do work for him all the way through our lives. There's no redundancy. There's no retirement in service for Jesus. It's there right until he returns. I think in many ways, the longer a person serves in the local church, if they keep serving in the local church, the more valuable they become in the local church. Their service may differ from what it used to be when they were younger, but I actually think the longer they go on continuing to serve, the more valuable they become in the local church for the cause of the gospel. But I think if people stop serving, then the less valuable they become and the more of a liability they become over a period of time. Jesus is almost kind of hinting at that, isn't he? Saying those who are kind of up and doing and taking responsibility will actually have more to do and become more valuable, more influential. But those who don't can become a liability over time. Jesus is giving us an opportunity to keep working for him and becoming more and more valuable over time, even as we get into our senior years. So that when he returns, we need not be left with our heads dropped in shame, like the boys on the beach at the end of Lord of the Flies, but rather our heads can be raised to shine, because Jesus recognizes something good in us, that we have kept our relationship with him, we've longed for him, we've watched for him, we've been serving him right up to that last day. Not shame, but shine. Let's just pause on that before we sing a great song to finish with this morning. Let's reflect on that. You know your own personal story. I might not know all the details. Reflect on God's word this morning. Not my words, but the words of Jesus. Thank you.